Want to welcome everyone participating in today's meeting or listening online. This meeting is streaming on live on FB.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants please identify themselves when speaking during the meeting. Anyone participating remotely should always keep their microphones muted except when speaking. The meeting is also being recorded and audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Commissions portal and select the link for the Water Management Board. The other thing I would like to remind you is put your cell phones on off or vibrate so they don't go off during the meeting. Those that do, buy lunch for everyone in the room. And I turned mine down already, by the way. Oh, I should turn that on, right? There we go. Okay, first thing on the agenda is adopt the final agenda. Is there additions or discussions on the final agenda?
Mr. Chairman, this is Tim Buehr. I just have one comment. The item, the power check item that was added to the agenda, I'm a little bit concerned that this is a very high-profile issue. I don't want to take it off the agenda. I'm not advocating for that. But I'm thinking that adding this kind of thing in the last week or so before we get to it, something this high profile, is a little bit concerning. So I just want to make those comments known.
Okay, the thing I want to say though is this is just a status update, kind of where it's at with that permit, because there was a continuance granted back in 2013. So all this is, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a status update and nothing else.
Well, I understand that, but I think in reading the Rapid City paper and those types of things, I think it was a little bit misleading, not only for the time that the meeting was going to be held, and also for just exactly what's going to be going on. I understand what's going on, but again, this is such a high-profile meeting that, I don't know, just sticking it on the agenda in the last minute is just a little bit disconcerting.
Okay. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Any more comments on the agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to adopt the final agenda?
Mr. Chairman, this is Freeman. I would move to adopt the agenda.
We have a motion by Mr. Freeman to adopt the final agenda. Is there a second?
Holtzbauer seconds.
Seconded by Holtzbauer. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carried. Conflicts, disclosures, and requests for state board waivers. Any of the board have conflicts? Any of the board have conflicts? Hearing none, we'll proceed. Adopt March 3rd, 2021 board minutes. Anyone see any additions or corrections?
Mr. Chairman, move approval.
Motion by Buehr. Is there a second for approval of the minutes?
Second.
Second by Mr. Freeman. Further discussion on the motion to approve the minutes? Hearing none. The secretary will call the roll, please.
Buehr?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holtzbauer?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Before I go on, Representative Mike Weisgram is here as a member of the Oversight Committee for the Legislature, and also Senator Mary Battle. She was kind enough to bring me around to introduce him to the board, but for those of you that don't, they're sitting in the audience, raise your hand. There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you for attending. Status and review of water litigation rights.
There's no update on water litigation.
Okay.
Update on DA and our activities. Just what the DA are.
Good morning, members of the board. This is Eric Brownlin, Chief Engineer of the Water Rights Program. The first thing I'd like to make the board aware of is that the Water Rights Program lost a member of its team here about a week and a half ago with the passing of Bill O'Connor. Bill O'Connor wasn't somebody that this board would have seen. He'd been with our department for 10 years. He was a natural resources technician for us. And what he did was he basically was our maintenance guy on our observation well network. He was the person that would winterize those observation wells, would be de-winterizing those observation wells this time of year. He would be the person who'd be out repairing those observation wells when a vehicle hit the ditch and mowed off the casing, or when an errant farmer basically wasn't paying attention and mowed one of them off, and things on that order. So again, he wasn't someone that would have ever come before this board, but I thought it was worth noting it, because really what he did was part of the backbone of what we do as far as groundwater with the water levels. And any board member, any report that this board board has ever seen come before it for groundwater had a hydrograph. And so the work that Bill did was behind that. So I just thought I'd make the acknowledgement of that for the board. With that, I don't really have much to update the board on. We're still dry. We're hoping for rain. So if anyone can do a rain dance, that would be nice. But I would like to turn it over to Brian Walsh, our public affairs director for DANR. And I think he's just going to give a real brief overview of the changes that occurred on April 19th.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Water Management Board. Again, my name is Brian Walsh, and I'm the Public Affairs Director for DANR. I'm here today to just provide you a very brief update on the status of the merger of the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. That process started last August when Governor Noem announced her plan to merge the two agencies. Then in September, DENR Secretary Hunter Roberts took over as the interim secretary for the Department of Ag, and he's been leading both agencies since then. And as you're probably aware, executive reorganizations are done through executive orders. The governor issued an executive order on January 19th that officially reorganized the two agencies into the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. That order took effect 90 days after it was issued. It did not require legislative approval. However, the legislature had the opportunity through a resolution of disapproval if they chose to reject the order. There was such an attempt made, but it did fail on the Senate floor, which cleared the way for the merger to proceed. So with all that done, on April 19th, which was just a couple weeks ago, we officially began serving South Dakota as the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources, with the mission to protect and preserve South Dakota's agriculture, environment, and natural resources through effective regulatory services, natural resource conservation, and financial and technical assistance. It's important to note for everyone as this merger is moving forward that no laws or regulations were changed as part of the merger in either agency, and we really don't anticipate significant changes to the work that this board does and has done successfully for a long time. One organizational change you may be interested in is in DENR we now have an Office of Water. The Office of Water has DENR's drinking water program, surface water quality program, and water rights program. And that office is being led by Deputy Secretary Jean Goodman, who's been with DENR for a long time, and I think you guys are pretty familiar with Jean. So she's the director for the Office of Water moving forward. Just a couple other comments on the other divisions in the new agency. We have an Agriculture and Environmental Services Division. Houses air quality, inspection, compliance, remediation, livestock services, minerals and mining, and waste management. Financial and Technical Assistance, which has our environmental funding and geological survey. Resource Conservation and Forestry, which has forestry, plant industry, watershed protection, and apiary. And finally, the State Fair is housed in the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. I know we have a very busy schedule today, so I'll just close in saying that we're excited about the merger. We're excited to work with you as DANR, and we really do think the merger puts us in a strong position to protect our environment and natural resources moving forward.
Deputy Secretary Gene Goodman, who's been with the...
And we're looking forward to working with you as we move forward as DANR. Happy to answer any questions if you have them. Otherwise, appreciate your time.
Thank you, Brian. Any questions of the board? I would have just one. Anything changing with employee statuses, numbers, up, down?
No, we did have some vacant positions. There were 5 vacant positions that we let go as we merged, but otherwise, no. It was just a combining of the two resources.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next on the agenda, public comment period in accordance with SDCL 125-1. Anyone here for public comments?
I did have some people sign up for that, so.
Okay, if you signed up for public comment and you want to give a comment to the board, you have 3 minutes. Do so from the podium, please, and identify yourself first.
Excuse me, this is Gina Barkhurst from Iowa City. I'm sorry, is this about the PowerTech issue or something else?
No, this is about, there was a law established a couple years ago in the legislature that all public boards, whether it be school board, city commission, this board, have to give a notice and let the public have a comment period at each meeting.
Okay, thank you.
If you wanted to talk about PowerTech, you can probably do that now because we're not going to take any comments on PowerTech. That's just a status update.
Oh, okay. The secretary in front had a sign-up sheet for public comments on PowerTech, and there were about
the public comment.
12 people. Thank you.
I know it's kind of confusing, but yeah, if you want to talk about that, you can. But you can talk about any topic you want to for this 3 minutes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and make my comment now. Again, I'm Gina, G-E-N-A, Barkhurst, B-A-R-K-H-U-R-S-T, from Rapid City. And I'm here as a concerned homeowner in Rapid City, concerned about the water quantity and quality if this PowerTech project should go forth. And reading over the literature I got in the mail, it seems to me that PowerTech doesn't have all the permits it needs in order to proceed with the state hearing process. So that's basically my comment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Anyone else public comment period? Anyone else? Last call, anyone else on public comment period? Seeing none, we're going to go on to administer oath to the Department of Ag and Natural Resources staff. You'd all stand and raise your right hands.
Do each one of you swear the testimony you will give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God?
I do.
Thank you. Request to amend rule section 7451.01.11, protection of wetlands as waters of the state. Kelly Boucher.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Kelly Boucher with the Office of Water with the Surface Water Quality Program. And I am here to request permission to make a rule change. If I may, if I could just take one moment to do a quick update on my program, got a couple changes that you may be interested in. As Brian Walsh mentioned, we've been included in the Office of Water. And one of the other changes that came out of the merger is the groundwater permitting. Most of the groundwater permitting activities are now within my program. So that's an activity under the purview of the board, so you may see it's coming back on some groundwater permitting issues going forward. Also, I've got a retirement that I want to let you know about. Patrick Snyder, is going to be retiring next month. And so I've got staff here that are going to be picking up a little bit past stepping aside. Jan Myrich is here. And Sean Kruger will be the other person that will be helping out, picking up some of the work that Pat's been doing, so you'll probably be seeing one or both of those folks. And then finally, I just want to thank you and let you know that the rules that we came before you in December have gotten final approval. We went before the Interim Rules Committee. That's approved through them. And filed with the Secretary of State, so they became effective at the end of April. So thank you for your support on both those rule changes on our water quality standards, as well as on the rules. So with that, I'm here to ask for another rule change. As you may be aware, EPA has been working to make changes to the Waters of the U.S. definition. This is a provision in the Federal Clean Water Act that basically determines which waters are regulated under that act. Now, that definition has no effect on how we handle things at the state level. We have our own definition of waters at the state. So those changes in that flux has not impacted our regulatory programs. What we have seen happening, however, is that as there have been all these changes through court cases, through changes that President Obama's administration made, additional changes that President Trump's administration made, and now President Biden is pulling back all those rule changes for further review, what we're seeing is that the Corps is not requiring permits for some of the activities that they have in the past. Specifically, there's some wetlands that people have been filling that no longer require any permitting from the Corps of Engineers. And what our concern is that we're seeing a gap now in protection. These wetlands are protected as waters of the state. There's no mitigation or other regulatory activities right now. The Corps is not stepping in. So we have been looking at what we can do to address that gap that we think exists. And the first step that we're asking for is a change to one of the provisions in our water quality standards. Right now, the way our standards are written is that if you do not have a permit from the Corps of Engineers, you cannot fill a wetland, period. So one of two things happened. In the past, we just allowed the Corps to handle that program. Now, with them allowing more wetlands to be filled, we're concerned about that approach and the fact that our rules actually say you can't do it without that permit. So we're looking to make a change to that and allow the state to have some authority to review those, that if there's not a Corps of Engineers for a permit, that the state has the authority to review that project and require some mitigation and some control measures to make sure we don't have further water quality impacts. So right now, the change that we're going to propose first going forward is going to be fairly simple, just giving us the authority to review these projects and require some control actions or mitigation measures. As we get our feet wet, metaphorically and actually, with that program, we may be coming forward with a more robust permitting program if we feel that's necessary. But with the rules still in flux with the Biden administration, we need to see how that plays out. We need to start reviewing these programs more, these projects and permits a little more closely. So this is going to be our first approach. So to that end, we'll be just changing the one rule that we have mentioned in your agenda. And we're going to do some stakeholder outreach before we propose that change. We'll be coming back to you with a formal rule hearing and a public notice when we're ready to go forward with that. But what we're asking for today is the board's permission to go forward with that rulemaking activity, to start that outreach, and when we're ready, public notice those rules. And I stand by for any questions.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. Does the board have any questions? Questions of the board? Don't sound like it. Need a motion to have Kelly's department proceed with tentative rule changes.
Mr. Chair, I would so move.
Have a motion by Freeman. Is there a second?
Dixon, second.
Second by Dixon. Further discussion on the motion for tentative approval? Further discussion? Hearing none, the Secretary will call the roll, please.
Bjork?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Huttmaker?
Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kelly. Next on the agenda, cancellation considerations. Ron DeWall.
Good morning, Ron DeWall, and in your packet, you have a list of water permits and water rights that were up for cancellation consideration today. Basically, there's three reasons for that to happen. Number one, somebody gets a permit, you've got 5 years to construct. A lot of times that does not happen, so you may have cancellations and they're labeled such under the use column for non-construction. They don't get constructed within the time period, they get scheduled for cancellation. The other two possibilities are either abandonment, where somebody has a water right or a permit that was developed, decided they want to quit using it and don't want it. It can be canceled due to abandonment. The other reason is due to forfeiture. Somebody has a water right that they no longer exercise. They're not really indicating that they are abandoning it. It can be canceled due to forfeiture as well. All of those have had personal contact from the water rights program. A lot of times that's through the irrigation questionnaire. Somebody will indicate they're done irrigating and no longer interested in pursuing that. That is one situation. The other typical one is due to a permit inspection. Somebody goes out to license a permit, inspect it, finds out it wasn't constructed. Or at that point, they find out that the owner doesn't want it. It was used and it's not being used, so it could be due to non-construction or forfeiture. All the permit holders have been noticed. They have received a notice from us. They received the chief engineer's recommendation. And in response, we have not heard from anybody on the list that they have any concerns with the permit being canceled. So with that, we're recommending cancellation of everything on that list.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Questions of the board on the cancellations? Questions of the board on cancellations? If not, is there a motion to approve the list as presented?
Mr. Chairman, I move the list as presented.
Okay, a motion by Dixon. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Bjork. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, the secretary will call the roll, please.
Bjork?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Marston?
Aye.
Huttmaker?
Aye. Motion carried. Next thing on the agenda is future use reviews.
And you also received in your board packet there's one permit, future use permit, that's up for review today. Certain entities such as cities and districts, they can reserve water for future use, and every 7 years those permits become subject to review by this board to see whether or not the board will allow them to remain in effect for an additional seven years. So each permit holder is contacted. They are asked to provide us whether or not they want to keep that permit. That has been provided to you in your board packet, their response to us. Once we know that they're interested in maintaining that future use permit, we go to public notice, and that has been done. And you also have that in your board packet. And that public notice would allow someone to contest or oppose the renewal of the future use permit. We did not receive anything in response to that public notice. And the last thing that you have in that packet is the chief engineer's recommendation. And for the city of Mulbridge, the recommendation is that that permit be allowed to remain in effect for another 7 years. And there's only one on the list.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Questions, Ron, about the future use permit for the city of Mulbridge? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
Holzbauer, I make a motion to approve.
So a motion by Holzbauer to approve Mulbridge's future use permit.
Second by Bjork.
Second by Bjork. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, secretary call the roll, please.
Bjork?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Huttmaker?
Aye. Motion carried. Next thing on the agenda, consider rescission of suspension of water rate 6168-3. Todd Adam. Ron? Ron?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm not Todd Adam. Bill Van Gamble, the lawyer here, represent Todd and the estate of Bob Adam. Todd was in contact with the office earlier this year. Bob, his father, passed away in November. Todd was appointed the first representative of that estate in December. As Todd was going about the process of planning his year with his father gone on the place, Steve became aware that the license that Bob had on this particular piece of ground in Hughes County was suspended by the board, I believe, in early 2020 for 3 years. I had the opportunity to look at the files. I've seen a few of them before. Bob certainly has been a problem over the years for this board. I understand that. In completing returning the annual reports on usages from that dry draw dam. But as we look to settle the estate, Todd would ask that this board, and maybe this is the cart ahead of the horse, but before we were able to transfer that, we were told that the suspension would be lifted without board action. So we're asking in the probate process, as we transfer that property to Todd himself personally, that the suspension is lifted. Todd is aware that he must comply with the terms and conditions of the board and of the statutes regarding the use of that dam, and he has pledged to do so. We ask that the suspension be lifted as the ownership will be transferred through the probate.
Does the board have any questions of Mr. Van Camp? Anyone on the board have a question?
What was the main reason why the dad didn't keep it up?
He just wouldn't file the paperwork.
He just didn't file.
Correct. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. That's fine.
I've known Bob for 25 years, and Bob was an interesting fellow, but he's very good at paperwork.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjorg. I move to rescind the suspension.
Okay, I've got a motion by Mr. Bjork to suspend the rescission. Is there a second to that motion?
Holtzbauer seconds.
No, Mr. Chair.
Second by Mr. Holtzbauer. Further discussion on the motion?
Well, I'd just like to say I believe in second chances. But remind your client he needs to do the paperwork.
Yes.
He has discovered since his father has passed, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Freeman, that there are a number of things that need to be cleaned up. This would be one of them.
Okay. Now, we do give second chances, but a lot of times we don't do thirds.
Understood.
Okay, further discussion on the motion? If not, Secretary, call the roll, please.
York.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Holzbauer.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Hutmaker.
Aye. Motion carried. Consider findings of facts, conclusion of law, and final decision in the matter of water permit application 2813-2, Mineral Mountain Resources.
This is David with Bay Board Council. This matter came before the board for a hearing on March 3, 2021. Board members James Hutmaker, Tim Bjork, Chad Comas, Rodney Freeman, Peggy Dixon, Leo Holzbauer, and Bill Larson were present at the hearing and heard the evidence presented. The Water Rights Program filed proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, and the applicant filed an objection and requested one additional finding of fact, specifically that the board finds that there is a reasonable probability that there is unappropriated water available to fulfill the amount requested by the application. That finding of fact was incorporated into this final findings of fact and conclusions of law. And based on the findings of fact and conclusions of law, the board will enter its determination that water permit application number 2813-2 is granted with the following qualifications. That the well approved under this permit will be located near domestic wells and other wells which may obtain water from the same aquifer. The well owner under this permit shall control his withdrawals so that there is not a reduction of needed water supplies, inadequate domestic wells, or inadequate wells having prior rights. Two, that the permit holder shall report to the chief engineer annually the amount of water withdrawn from the crystalline rock aquifer. And three, the water permit 2813-2 authorizes a total annual diversion of 3.68 acre feet of water for exploratory drilling.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McVeigh. We have a motion to approve.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
A motion by Mr. Freeman to approve.
findings of fact, conclusions of law. Do you have a second?
Second by York.
Second by York. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, the secretary will call the roll.
York.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Holzbauer.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Hutmaker.
Aye. Motion carried. Next on the agenda, PowerTech USA Inc. Status Conference Concerning Water Permit Applications Number 2685-2 and 2686-2 and Groundwater Discharge Permit 1-13. Matt, are you going to give that status update?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Matt Nas from Rapid City, along with Rich Williams, with the attorneys for PowerTech USA Incorporated. We're here this morning to formally make the board aware that we intend to proceed with the water permit applications and the approval of the groundwater discharge plan for PowerTech USA. As you recall, in 2013, this board granted PowerTech's motion to continue these matters pending review by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Environmental Protection Agency. Since that time and recently, the NRC and the EPA have issued permits and made determinations of financial assurance regarding PowerTech's applications before those federal agencies. Those permits are currently working their way through the appeals process. The issuance of those permits effectuated the goal of PowerTech's motion to continue, which was to narrow the issues before this board. Because those permits have been issued, PowerTech intends, as I said, to move forward with the state permitting process in front of the Water Management Board. Our intent is to file a motion for a scheduling order, which would provide dates for reestablishing the proceedings in front of this board. We intend to do that, file the motion to the pre-hearing chair, which at the time we filed our motion for status conference, we weren't aware of. Since that time, Mr. Freeman has signed the order for the motion for status conference, so perhaps we don't need further guidance on that issue, but our thought is to file that motion for a scheduling order and file it soon with Mr. Freeman. I think as you saw from the flurry of activity that our motion for a status conference triggered, there are issues that will probably need to be decided preliminarily. Our thought on that would be that those issues can be decided after they are fully briefed, a hearing properly noticed for determination of those issues. We also intend to file our motion for scheduling order with the, I think they were referred to as the Class A interveners during these proceedings earlier. Those were the interveners who elected to fully participate in the administrative, the contested cases before this board and received notice of the board's order on continuance in 2013. They were on a certificate of service from the order on order granting continuance in 2013. So that's who we intend to formally serve our motion for scheduling order on. One of the reasons we wanted to come before you today was if you think that we should do that differently, or if you think we should file our scheduling order differently, well, we're certainly not looking for any substantive determinations this morning. If there's any guidance that could be provided regarding simply filing the motion for scheduling order, or whatever motion that turns out to be, we appreciate that this morning. If there are any questions?
I would suggest that from a service perspective, you should serve all the interveners, not just the Class A interveners, because the other classes are entitled to notice as well.
Okay. And I think as you saw from our motion for status conference, then just who we served everybody with the motion for this status conference.
Mr. Nas, this is Mr. Bjork. Do you plan on filing an additional motion with the Board of Minerals and Environment at the same time?
That's a great question, Mr. Bjork. My understanding is the Board of Minerals and Environment continue their proceedings in front of it until such time as the Water Management Board made its decision. So our thought at this time is to file a motion for scheduling order with the Water Management Board first. As that contested case proceeds, I think we would initiate the sort of preliminary matters in front of the Board of Minerals and Environment, but the motion for scheduling order in front of this board will come first.
Mr. McVeigh, this is York again. I know when I was on the board back in 2013 when we went through these hearings, we had a discussion as to whether or not this motion should be filed in front of the Water Management Board or the Board of Minerals and Environment, which one should be first. And the decision was made to file in front of this board, but I don't remember the reasoning for that. Do you have any indication of why we did it that way?
I do not. I have no idea. I mean, it's something I can look into. I have some old files on the matter, but I don't have a specific anything I can comment on that now.
Okay, thank you.
I was just going to say that's something we could certainly include in our initial motion as to why Water Management Board or BME.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Any further comments or questions from the board? Further comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, I think the next move is up to you to file your order and give notice to all the participants.
Wait, excuse me, this is Bruce Ellison, Mr. Chairman. Are we going to have some kind of input from the interveners as to whether this is even appropriate at this time, or is only Mr. Nas's interests of concern? And I don't say that facetiously, because that's what it sounds like.
Well, Mr. Ellison,
this is totally inappropriate.
This is David McVeigh. What was noticed and the purpose of this meeting today is a status conference. And, you know, PowerTech is entitled to file whatever motions on their procedures they want. And you'll have the opportunity, as part of that notice process and hearing process on their motion for scheduling order, you'll have a full opportunity to be heard at that time. But here, you know, as a practical matter, they can file whatever motions that they want to file. We don't really have, we wouldn't be able to take a position on that. Whether those motions will be granted is a whole different question.
I thought that the purpose of today's hearing was to determine whether, just like when we were in front of the mining board a couple of months ago, it was a status hearing. And much of the same information showing that the federal matters are far from complete was addressed, and the board decided not to take any further action other than a future status hearing. I thought that's what we were doing today, and it sounds like the board has already decided, well, let's let PowerTech go ahead. They may have filed the written motion, but the record is particularly clear from Mr. Freeman's order of 2013 that all PowerTech was doing was filing what all interveners had already discussed with the board to continue the hearing pending resolution of the federal applications. The EPA has not even had a hearing on its license yet. The BLM is just beginning. This whole issue is arising because the federal courts are one federal appeals board, and the EPA is wondering what PowerTech status is in front of the state board. The state board's clearly said until the federal matters are done, we will not be back before in front of the state boards, because why waste the time of duplicating effort? If we haven't had an hearing on the critical issues, such as the Class 3 wells, such as the deep disposal wells in front of the EPA, how can we even be talking about getting back in front of the state board? So I'm confused. Obviously, the board will do whatever it wants to do, but it's real clear that under Mr. Freeman's order of 2013, that we are way before a time to be addressing this. I mean, Mr. Freeman specifically ordered not just PowerTech's motion, because the court, Mr. Freeman specifically noted the intervener's concurrent interest in continuance, and Mr. Freeman ordered that the matter is continued until resolution by the federal agencies of PowerTech's pending applications. We're years away from those. So the whole purpose of continuing, as I remember, both the Water Management Board and the Board of Minerals Environment hearings was because let's let the feds do it first before we utilize our resources to look and see what they've done, to see whether they've done a good enough job, to see whether the state's interests are protected. What PowerTech is doing is saying, no, let's forget about that, because in the usual way now of issuing a license before you have a hearing to determine whether a license is issued, as though that's a final resolution. It's not. I would also point out to the board that there are pleadings right now in front of the EPA in which PowerTech asked until May 18th. It was just a little bit in Ms. Mine's rendition of the status, but a more recent order, which I believe the board has in front of it, gives PowerTech until the 18th to get a resolution. So they're going to be going back to the board, the EPA, and saying, well, see, the board of Measure Board is getting ready to proceed forward. It's the cart before the horse.
Mr. Ellison,
yes.
Stop for a minute.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
The whole thing is here is PowerTech has the right to file a motion with this board, and so do you. That does not necessarily mean any of the motions are going to be granted, but they have that right to do that. And we are not going to debate that issue, whether they have the right or not to file that motion today. That's not part of it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. What I'd like to request is that we have a hearing on these motions. I'm going to make that oral request now, rather than just simply have pleadings.
You will get noticed of the motions as they are presented to the board and the board's attorney. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would also request in that regard, it's been very difficult to get written orders. Could we please do them electronically? I would thank you.
Okay. Now we're caught up with that. Everyone clear? The board had questions?
I would like to clarify that as far as transmitting orders, that'll be done in the normal manner with regular mail as opposed to electronically.
Okay, next on the agenda, water burn application. Oh.
I noticed some of the interveners have moved. When I look at that list, if I have a better address, can I report that to somebody at the DANR?
I would think that would be helpful.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
And maybe make sure that Mr. Moss is here too.
Oh, yes.
But Vaughn Duval will be the one now.
Vaughn Duval.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I'm sure after what, 8-9 years, and there's probably some changes.
Yeah.
Okay. We are done with that matter. Water permit application 2814-2. Jude Weideman, Big Mountain Cabins.
Mr. Chair, could we take a break while
it's rearranged? Get it rearranged, yeah, that would be good.
We will be even come.
Yeah. Keep it in your phone. Okay. Being back to order again. Water permit application number 2814-2. Jude Wilderman, Big Mountain Cabin.
Do you want to know the appearances? Or?
Sure, we can do appearances.
And my stay with the chief engineer and the water rights program.
Von Buehner,
I'm here in opposition. I live in the vicinity of the application.
Okay.
Good speaker.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that, too.
Lon Buter. I'm here in opposition of the application. I live about 2 miles from the application.
Okay.
Jude Wilder, owner of Big Mountain Cabs.
Okay, thank you. Pam, I think you're first one up.
To begin with, this application was initially submitted by Big Mountain Cabins. It was subsequently transferred to Jude Wilderman, and therefore the application proceeds under Jude Wilderman's name, and where counsel is not necessary to represent Mr. Wilderman in this individual capacity. So I just wanted to make that clear. So I am the only attorney here. As a matter of course, water rights would offer exhibit number one, which is the administrative file. The administrative file contains the application, the report to the chief engineer, the recommendation of the chief engineer, the transfer of ownership, the petition to intervene, notices of publication, and other documents which have been received during the course of processing this application.
I have no objection. Okay. No objections? We'll accept that.
I would call Adam Matowitz. Do you introduce yourself to the board, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, some audience. I am Adam Matowitz, staff engineer with the ANR Water Rights Program.
Adam, before we go any further, were you present in the room earlier when Dan Gaynor's staff was placed under oath?
Yes, I was.
And you understand you're under oath at this time?
Yes, I do.
Adam, what is it that you do for ANR?
For the water rights program, I am a senior groundwater engineer. That means I am responsible for writing reports on groundwater applications as well as being the lead reviewer of other engineer groundwater permit application reports. I review well completion reports and well construction standards. I license well drillers and pump installers. I am the day-to-day manager for our technicians, our two permit technicians, as well as the primary manager for our four seasonal observational technicians that measure the water levels in our observation wells, and as well as one of the main deciders on what we should be doing with that, whether it is more wells, less wells, displaced wells, etc. Provide technical assistance to the chief engineer, the water management board, and other department staff, as well as the public when needed, and other duties as assigned by the chief engineer.
I'm showing you what's marked as exhibit two. Could you tell the board what that is, please?
That is my curriculum vitae.
This document?
Yes,
say
I did.
Again, say again, Ann. Did you create this document?
Yes, I did.
Is it accurate?
As of the date on the updated date of April 23rd, 2021.
I would move admission of exhibit two.
No objection. Thank you. I'll accept those two.
I don't have a board member's copy.
Thank you.
David, would you like
to? Sure.
Adam, how long have you been with Water Rights?
A little over 9 years.
Did you review this application during the course of your job?
Yes, I did.
Did you prepare a report?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any additions or corrections to make to the report at this time?
Yes, in the opening paragraph, in the fourth line, after where it says Crystal Rock Aquifer for commercial use. I would also add, and to serve a single domestic household.
Okay. Is there anything about that domestic use that changes your report?
No, it does not.
Does domestic use require a permit?
Not at the limit, or at the diversion rate the applicant stated that it would be using.
Are there any other additions or corrections?
No more.
So Adam, could you describe the application for the board, please?
Water permit application number 2814-2 proposes to appropriate less than 2 acre feet of water annually at a maximum instantaneous diversion rate of 0.067 cubic feet of water per second, which is equivalent to 30 gallons per minute. From one existing well, approximately 160 feet deep, completed into the Crystalline Rock Aquifer for commercial use. The well is located in the southwest quarter of Section 22, Township 1 South, 36 East in Bennington County. The well site is located approximately 2 miles southwest of Robertsville.
Adam, you said this was an existing well. Has this use been, has this use existed without a permit?
As far as I'm aware, yes.
How did it come before the board?
At a previous board hearing, we were alerted to several entities in the area of Robertsville that were operating without a water permit. The water rights program received to contact them to bring them into compliance.
So when you reviewed the application, what was the scope of your review?
My scope of review was determination of whether there is a reasonable probability unappropriated water is available, whether the development of this proposed appropriation would unlawfully impair existing water rights.
Is there a standard by which you determine the availability of unappropriated water?
The standard I used is, with the best information available, determination of whether there is a greater or equal amount of recharge entering the aquifer as there is withdrawals, as well as comparison and looking at one observational well we have available.
Okay. So for purposes of the record, what is recharge?
Recharge is water entering an aquifer.
And what would a withdrawal be?
A deliberate removal of water from an aquifer.
Okay. You said that this application seeks an appropriation from the Crystalline Rock Aquifer. Could you describe the Crystalline Rock Aquifer for the board, please?
At the area of the application, the Crystalline Rock Aquifer consists of metaconglomerates, quartzites, and metapellites, as well as some metagraywacke and metagabbro. They are metamorphic type rocks of crystalline structure. Water is stored in their secondary porosity, which is the faults, fractures, and cracks within the rock, instead of instead of primary porosity, like in sand. It's also in the secondary porosity, and water moves through it as a fracture flow. The secondary porosity is uneven and unpredictable due to just the nature of coastal rock and weathering that creates them. And the crystalline rock makes up the central core of the Black Hills, underlying approximately 574,000 acres.
So Adam, you said that these materials are uneven and unpredictable. How does that affect your analysis of the aquifer?
Due to the uneven and unpredictable nature of the fractures and the cracks that where the water is stored, we need to look at as site-specific data as available when reviewing unappropriated water, reviewing well completion reports to determine unlawful impairment, all of that. As site-specific as possible when it's available.
And upon what do you base that approach?
That is based upon the fact that with the uneven and unpredictable nature, as well as the larger faults that are within the crystalline rock, the smaller fractures don't tend to extend very far, and they can run at odd angles to each other, and the faults tend to act as maximum boundaries, the larger mapped faults, for the localized aquifers.
Is that approach also based upon your years of experience and your education?
Yes.
Okay. So could you tell the board how the Crystalline Rock Aquifer received recharge?
The crystalline rock aquifer primarily receives recharge through the infiltration of precipitation, snow melt, and runoff where there are fractures at surface, as well as through alluvial and terrace deposits that are permeable and going through infiltration through those, and some stream flow loss into the aquifer.
Have any studies been done of the crystalline rock aquifer specifically with respect to recharge?
Yes, Driscoll and Carter in 2001 wrote a report regarding a study that was conducted as part of the Black Hills Hydrology Study.
And what were their conclusions about recharge?
Their conclusions were that there had to be at least 3,600 acre feet of recharge to the entirety of the crystalline rock aquifer before the Black Hills, because that was their estimate of withdrawal. But they further went on to conclude that the recharge must be much greater to account for losses from the aquifer to the base flow of streams.
So at a bare minimum, you're saying there's at least 3,600 acre feet of recharge to the crystalline rock?
Across the entirety of the central core of the Black Hills, yes.
Okay. Would that recharge estimate, how would you apply that to the localized area?
Due to the general differences in precipitation, as well on the larger scale of the Black Hills, where the north receives more precipitation than the southern end of the hills, as well as the unpredictable nature of the fractures and folding and cracks that allow water to move, it would not be reasonable to divide that equally over any area with the information currently available.
Okay. Are there observation wells that are completed in the crystalline rock aquifer?
The water rights program monitors two observation wells labeled as completed in the crystalline rock aquifer.
Did you examine the data from those two wells?
Yes, I did.
Did you rely on the data from both of those wells?
I relied on the data from one of the wells.
Why only one?
Observation well PE95D, located approximately 4.8 miles north of the well the applicant intends to use. A review done by previous engineers as well as reaffirmed by myself determined that the well was potentially completed into two aquifers, the overlying deadwood and the underlying crystalline rock, and review of the data compared to deadwood aquifer wells as well as the other crystalline rock aquifer well that we have showed that it was behaving more like the deadwood aquifer. And so with the inability to determine which aquifer is most reliably measuring, I only relied on the data from observation well CU-86A.
And could you tell the board the location of CU-86A?
CU-86A is located approximately 15.2 miles southwest of the applicant's well in the city of Custer.
And why is it that you review observation well data?
The observation well data is a real-time measurement of wells in the aquifer, obviously at the time of measurement, giving us a long-term history, if in this case since the late 1980s, regarding general changes in the overall water level of the aquifer.
How is looking at observation well data 15 miles away helpful in reviewing this point of diversion?
Observation well CU-86A is near larger appropriate users, such as the city of Custer and some domestic wells. So it does show that even though there is some pumping nearby, that the water levels in the aquifer do recharge on a seasonal basis. They aren't just continually declining, which in turn shows that the aquifer can be recharged.
Okay. And you would anticipate, and how exactly strike that? I'm going to show you what's marked as Exhibit 3. Can you tell the board what that is, please?
Exhibit 3 is an enlarged version of Figure 1 from page 2 of my report. It is a map showing
the faults and water rights in the area of the applicant as well as the applicant's well location.
Did you create this map?
Yes, I did.
And how did you create this map?
I used ArcGIS as the mapping program and then information from databases maintained by the Water Rights Program and our Bureau of Information Technology, as well as downloads from the USGS and the South Dakota Geologic Survey.
I would move Exhibit 3.
No objection.
I'll accept this. Accept Exhibit 3.
I'm going to give you our copy so I don't lose the original. The designations on the map.
This is not.
Oh, this is not for, I'm so sorry, I gave the wrong map. Well, really quick, maybe I'll just move Exhibit 4 right now. Adam, what's Exhibit 4?
Exhibit 4 is a modified version of Figure 3 from my report. It is zoomed into a roughly a radius of 1 mile around the applicant's well, showing domestic, well completion reports on file with the water rights program, as well as water rights in the area and the applicant's well and faults.
Did you create this map?
Yes, I did.
And how did you create this map?
I used ArcMap, databases maintained by the water rights program, the well completion reports in the water rights database. Downloads from the United States Geologic Survey and South Dakota Geologic Survey to develop the faults.
I would move Exhibit 4.
I've got two Exhibit 3s.
You need a page. I am so sorry.
Got
these okay.
No objection.
Except Exhibit 4.
And before I can mess it up, I'm putting Exhibit 4 down on the pile. Okay, let's go to Exhibit 3. Could you describe the designations you have on Exhibit 3?
On Exhibit 3, the red dots are the locations of diversion points for the water rights file with the water rights program. The red line is Highway 16. The blue lines are section lines, being a mile long each. And the various types of black lines are fault descriptions as provided by my data source.
Okay. And let's look at Exhibit 4 now and describe the designations on Exhibit 4. What's the difference between Exhibit 3 and Exhibit 4?
Exhibit 4 includes one extra designation that Exhibit 3 does not, and that is the addition of the blue triangles. The blue triangles represent the map locations as they are mapped in our well completion reports database of well completion reports on file with the water rights program.
Adam, what is the significance of the fault lines on these maps?
In general, fault lines act as maximum limits of aquifer extent for the localized crystalline rock aquifers, because in general, due to misalignments of the smaller fractures that water moves along, there will be limitations to what extent water can move. It will move more along the fault instead of across it, and therefore acting as a boundary.
So when you reviewed this application, could you describe on Exhibit 4 the area that you looked to for your technical analysis?
I looked primarily between the two faults where the applicant's well is located, which is marked by the UW within the yellow circle within the white square.
And again, why did you look at that specific area?
Again, the faults predominantly act as boundary conditions and are limiting factors on the probable maximum extent of any localized aquifer the applicant can withdraw water from.
What then would be the effect of a point of diversion in between those two faults on, say on exhibit three, a cluster of rights in the upper right-hand corner.
No effect.
How did you determine what water rights are in existence and where they are located?
I used our water rights database that the water rights program maintains, which includes, as part of their permitting process, includes them denoting where their wells are. And as part of the licensing process, we have reviewed and found those wells.
Okay. What can you tell the board about withdrawals from this localized area?
From the localized area between the two vaults, there is the applicant's proposed withdrawal of up to 2 acre feet per year. Well, water right number 2224-2 is estimated to withdraw 1.7 acre feet per year. And then any domestic user, making the assumption that there are 70 gallons per minute per person, Your Honor, sorry, 70 gallons per day per person, which came from a USGS study in a specific to Pennington County, as well as assuming 2.5 people per rural dwelling, would use 0.2 acre feet per year per rural dwelling.
Okay, and how many, I think I missed it, how many domestic rights are in this localized area?
Based on our well, completion report database, there are three domestic wells that we know are between the vaults based on our mapping, and then there is an additional five that, due to the limitations of our database, which maps the well completion report at the center of whatever geographic unit we're given. So if it's a quarter, it maps at the center of the 40 acres. If it's a quarter, it's a map mapped at the center of the 160. If it's just a section, it's mapped at the middle of the section. There's an additional five on top of those three that I know are in there that may be located within, between the vaults.
So when you're calculating this, are you taking a conservative approach?
Generally, yes.
Okay. Adam, when you identified the rights, could you explain again why you're not including the rights located in the upper right-hand corner of Exhibit 3 or in the lower portion of Exhibit 3?
First, because they are outside the vaults that are previously spoken about, as compared to the applicant's well, and furthermore, at that distance, due to the uneven and unpredictable nature of fractures, it is unlikely that they would have any connection.
Okay. Adam, do you have an opinion as to the availability of unappropriated water?
Yes.
What is that opinion?
It is my opinion that there is a reasonable probability of unappropriated water available for the applicant.
And upon what do you base that opinion?
I base it upon the observation well does show that the aquifer can receive recharge. There is relatively limited use between the vaults where the applicant is located, and that the applicant's well has been in use for some time. 2014 was when the well was constructed, so that would be the oldest at the very least. Has been in use for some time without issue, as reported to us.
Okay. And do you have an opinion as to the potential for unlawful impairment of existing rights?
Yes.
And what is that opinion?
That there's a reasonable probability that there would be no unlawful impairment of existing, of adequate wells for existing water rights and domestic wells.
And upon what do you base that opinion?
In part, the relatively low diversion rate that the applicant is going to use for a majority of the year, which would fall under their domestic use and not need to be a permit anyways. And then the distance between wells, as well as the unique protections that we have in place to ensure the applicant does not unlawfully impair.
Before we talk about those qualifications, let me ask you, have there been any complaints regarding water availability or impairment in this area, in this localized area?
In the localized area, between the vaults and the applicant is located, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Let's go back to the qualifications that you mentioned. What does not those qualifications factor into your amount, your opinion as to a unlawful impairment?
Our primary qualification that's included in every groundwater permit, as far as I'm aware, is that the applicant, because they'll be located near domestic wells or other wells that may have senior water rights, they are required to control their withdrawals so as not to reduce needed water supplies in adequate wells.
And what is an adequate well?
An adequate well is a well in which, at the time of construction, a pump can be placed at least 20 feet into the aquifer, or if the aquifer is less than 20 feet thick, as near to the bottom of the aquifer as possible.
So to receive protection, does a well need to be adequate?
Yes.
Does an adequate well mean that it will produce the water?
No.
Okay. Have you, if an adequate well is not producing water, does that mean it is unlawfully impaired?
Not necessarily.
Have you reviewed Mr. Muner's petition?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to go through it and ask for your response as to some of his assertions. In the first paragraph, he says he's a domestic user located approximately 2 miles from the application. Do you have a response to any concerns about water given his location?
Given his location, I do not have any concerns regarding the applicant's proposed.
Are you aware of the approximate location of the point of diversion at which he receives water?
Yes.
Would you be able to describe where that would be, perhaps on Exhibit 3?
Mr. Buehner's water supply well is approximately in the right upper right-hand corner, or the northeast corner of my map, near the cluster of water rights up there, such as 2211-2, 483-2.
And why do you believe that Mr. Buehner, that there's not a likely probability that Mr. Buehner's well would be, or water source would be impaired?
First, again, the faults acting as generally limiting factors on the potential for the applicant's well to influence wells outside of them. And furthermore, over this distance, and especially at the applicant's low diversion rate, the potential for creating any drawdown from his well to go that far in the Crystal Rock Aquifer is essentially zero.
Okay. Further down in Mr. Buehner's petition, he states, I do not believe the report to the chief engineer properly describes and assesses the potential impact to the large number of domestic wells in the area. Do you have a response?
I can only assess the wells that are on completion reports that are on file, or that I have become aware of through various processes that I may be in the field and become aware of things.
Are all domestic wells on file with the department?
No.
Why not?
We did not require well completion reports till sometime in the 1980s, and there are plenty of wells that predate that time. Well, we do have some of those older records that was relied upon the well drillers' goodwill or hunting down by some of my predecessors to get those well completion reports.
Is there any way to discern what wells are out there?
Not without a site visit tracing through the entirety of the woods and talking to all the neighbors.
Okay. Mr. Buehner next states that Table 1 of the report to the chief engineer names water right entities that apparently are no longer in existence. Do you have a response to that?
I am charged with reviewing the water rights that we have on file with what information I have available. Yes. And I can only review what I know exists.
Can you unilaterally disregard a water right if you believe it's no longer in use?
Not unless the board is actively taking action to cancel it.
Okay. The rest of the sentence says that it also appears to potentially exclude other existing commercial entities in the area. Do you have a response to that?
Once we've been alerted to them, the water rights program has pursued bringing them into compliance with South Dakota Water Law.
I'm sorry. What's the water right program
becomes aware of these commercial entities, we have pursued bringing them into compliance with South Dakota water law.
Adam, in your experience, does a commercial entity always have the same name as the permit holder?
No.
The final assertion is that the application seems to show that the applicant's commercial entity has been operating without the water permit required by state law. Your response?
We are bringing in compliance right now. We are in the middle of a hearing to potentially issue them a water permit.
So it's, to your knowledge, they have been operating without?
As far as what has been indicated to me, yes.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay, Mr. Buhner, do you have questions of this witness?
Yeah.
As long as the court reporter can hear you, I'm good there. Turn your mic on, please.
Is it possible to turn this on today and just give us a press click?
Yeah, just press it once. Press it once, okay. And when it's green, let's go.
In your report, you state that the crystal and rock aquifer consists of numerous localized aquifers. You also have explained that because of the policy, you believe that the applicant's area wouldn't affect the Rockerville area about 2 miles away. So what you're saying is that you're looking at multiple aquifers that are very potentially very small in size.
Potentially.
But yet you're comfortable using a well 15 miles away to say that that well can appropriately determine whether or not there's recharge in the applicant's area as well as the Rockerville area. How can that be consistent? Because you refer to that as aquifer, but yet it's not aquifer, it's very small, a large number of localized aquifers.
I believe I stated that it shows the aquifers can be recharged in an area where there are other users.
I also heard the number 3,600 acre feet, and it sounds like a big number when you talk about recharge has to be at least that area, but your report also says that the exposed area of the crystalline rock is 574,000 acres, so that 3,600 feet only represents 0.07 of an inch of water. So I don't disagree with the statement that recharge is greater than 3,600 feet. But I think we need to recognize that recharge is critical for all the wells, whether they're domestic or commercial, to continue to get water. Is that not true?
Yes, recharge is critical.
In the literature, and we covered this in an earlier hearing, but I'm going to ask the question again. In the same literature, they do state it's difficult to predict the recharge in any particular area, but yet they do have a map that varies from the north to south, but they have a map that does predict in general how much recharge is going to be available based on projected rainfall and snowfall. Is that not correct?
I'm not aware of a recharge map. I am aware of a yield map, and they are not the same.
Okay, can you explain the difference between the yield map and the recharge map?
My understanding, their yield map is a broad prediction of essentially the difference between precipitation and the evaporation. So it is the water that would, if it were an infinite bathtub, that would be there, in theory, after that.
I encourage you to go back and relook at that literature and better assess what the yield is, because my understanding, having read that and having been through the hearing, is they do take into account evaboration and they end up with the yield that comes back to the
question, not testimony.
Sustained.
In your report, in your table, you estimate water usage of the various water rights in the area. And you say that you assume that they're using 60% of their maximum permitted conversion rate. Is that correct?
Yes.
Why do you use that approach to estimate water use?
That is a standardized approach that we use in the Water Rights Program that was developed when discussions with municipalities in the past, when the program went from issuing permits exclusively on diversion rate to assigning large volumes to them, and that seemed to be discussing with them, and this is my understanding, as explained to me by my predecessor, that when looking at their permitted, if you converted their diversion rate to an absolute pumping volume, looking to what their records showed, they were pumping approximately 60%.
Are you aware that EANR, well, actually it's state law, wastewater flow capacity requirements, that there are numbers that they provide that project usage for various types of properties?
I'm aware of wastewater flow numbers, but know nothing else other than that.
The wastewater flow numbers, in our particular area, we're not looking at irrigation or anything else. The water that's produced generally ends up going into the wastewater. And the example, I guess, I would ask you about is, you mentioned that rural dwellings would use 70 gallons of water per person per day, but yet a domestic well can produce up to 18 gallons per minute and still be within their rights under law. So if I applied the 60% to domestic wells, I could say, well, gosh, I could produce over 10 gallons per minute, but in reality, per person, I'm using 70 gallons a day. And that huge difference is a factor of 90. So depending on what methodology you use in this particular domestic use case, you can get a wide range with regard to what actually is the water that's being used. And part of my concern and why we're here today is I'm very concerned about the water usage that is in your report. I'm concerned about the completeness of your report. Frankly, we're here because I was the petitioner that said Big Mountain Cabins does not have a water right, in my opinion. They weren't the only commercial entity that I brought up at that point in time. That was during the R&J LLC hearing. So when you look at your report that you prepared for R&J LLC, it did not include all the water that was being used in the area. And it did not appropriately represent all the commercial entities that were using water. The errors that I pointed out then
object. There needs to be questions, not testimony. Mr. Buehner will have more than ample opportunity to provide his thoughts.
Sustained, yeah. Let's keep those in question forms and your statement. You'll have a chance to do your own testimony and closing statement at the end.
Okay. When you say that there's no effect between the wells, in your opinion, of the applicant's area and my area, or what I'll call the general Rockerville area, what information other than a map that shows a fault that you have that can confirm that?
Statements from well drillers and well owners that
to pump their wells hard enough to create significant drawdown far from their well, results in their well running dry because they overpumped their well. I can apply various equations to that data to estimate drawdown over a certain distance. I could use, I don't remember the exact flow name, but it's a slab flow method. Essentially, that's designed for fractures and vaulting. And I've done that on a much more prolific aquifer in the Madison. And at this diversion rate, it is essentially non-existent. I was looking at several hundred gallons per minute using the Madison.
Well, we're not dealing with the Madison in this particular reservoir, are we?
The calculations as a baseline are going to be roughly, they're illustrative.
You've mentioned that you're not aware of any complaints, and you reference apparently a file that your organization keeps. Are you aware that water complaints, not only on water quantity, but water quality, have been filed with DANR in this vicinity?
I testified that in between the vaults, there were none that I was aware of. I am aware of the one that is mentioned in my report.
Are you aware that those complaints have also been filed with Pennington County?
No, I don't work for Pennington County.
But I believe your report did refer to or state that there were no complaints in the Pennington County file, so I'm just kind of trying to understand exactly what information you have when it comes to complaints.
It is the DANR, Pennington County file, the file that we maintain in the water rights program for complaints that come to us.
On water rights, on your table one, you said that you only review what is available. Do you review any DANR information that is outside of the water rights program?
Generally, no.
Is there additional DANR information available with regard to water usage of commercial entities?
Not of commercial entities that I'm aware of. Possibly for public water systems, but whether they are commercial entities or not, I do not know.
Have you looked at the public water system database in this area?
In the past, yes.
In the preparation of this report, did you look at that information?
I do not remember.
Would it surprise you if the public water database would show that there's significant additional commercial production in this area that's apparently not underwater, right?
It would not surprise me that there was additional commercial diversion rates in the Rockerville area.
That are not covered in your report.
Correct.
Which would mean that the report, which is predominantly used by the chief engineer to assess whether or not this water rate should be approved or not, is perhaps incomplete or perhaps inaccurate.
I would not say that.
If there are additional commercial entities, I'll try to ask the question differently. If there are additional commercial entities other than has already been reported to your organization that are producing today, producing water, but apparently do not have a water right, would that indicate that perhaps revisions and modifications should be made to this report prior to a decision being made by the Water Board?
That is not a decision for me to make.
On the water rights clients that you listed, do you go through and look at your file to see what those water rights or what the water use purpose is?
I do check to make sure the listed use does make sense.
So on Pine Haven Heritage Home, could you briefly describe what that is being, water is being used for?
It's being used for some form of commercial entity. That is all the more I remember.
Rockerville Gold Town.
Commercial entity.
Rockerville Park.
Whatever is listed in the table, sir.
Another commercial entity?
Yes.
Would it surprise you if those commercial entities that I just walked through that you commented on, would it surprise you if none of those commercial entities were present in the drinking water program database?
Could you please restate the question?
Would it surprise you if the Pine Haven Heritage Home, the Rockerville Gold Town, the Rockerville Park, which you have stated are commercial entities, would it surprise you if those commercial entities are not listed in the drinking water DANR database?
It would not surprise me if they were not listed.
State law requires most commercial, most if not all commercial entities to have a water right, as well as if they're serving the public, a drinking water permit. Is that not correct?
I do not know the full extent of drinking water permit law. But most commercial entities, as far as I'm aware, are required to have a water right.
Have any of these commercial entities been visually inspected with regard to their water right?
They were licensed at one point, which means DANR staff has been at, DANR staff was there at the time of licensing.
You're assuming that, or you know that?
I know that. That is part of our permitting process. It requires a site visit to ensure at the time that we do that, that we are licensing as built.
When you access DANR records off of the water right database and you look at the detailed information, some of the entities do have an inspection report from when it was issued or when it was revalidated later, but many do not. Does that mean the data is just missing, or does that mean that perhaps there was not an inspection?
I cannot speak for inspections before my time.
So then you don't really know whether or not these properties have been inspected or not at the time they were granted their water right.
Objection asked and answered, argument.
Sustained. The applicant is asking for a maximum diversion rate of 30 gallons a minute. I'll cancel that question. I've got no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Greener. Mr. Wyatt, do you have any questions of Mr. Knight?
Yeah, I just got one. I don't know much about geology, but...
Can you speak up, please? I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Sorry about that.
Turn your mic on, please. Oh, it's on.
I think it's on, yeah. Yes, sir. like, since I don't know much about geology, but I know altitude, and my house sits 300 feet above Meyer's house. And my well depth is a maximum of 160 feet deep, which is at about around 60 feet. So even if I run my well dry, I would still have to drill 140 feet just to reach his front door. So is it possible that I'm not actually in the same aquifer as you think?
It is likely that you aren't, in part due to your elevation that you mentioned, although the fractures can go down, and so they could, in theory, fall, but the faulting, in general, is going to prevent any significant transfer of drawdown created by you bumping to that distance of 7 miles away.
Sure, because I would, even if I run mine dry, he would have zero effect from my well, just because of my elevation, right?
More to do with the fault would be a larger contributor, but the elevation differences as well.
That's all I got.
Thank you. Andy, any redirect?
Not at this time, thank you.
Okay, does the board have any questions of Adam? Any of the board have questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Dixon.
So these entities that have been using waters without permits, what is it that we're doing to get them in compliance?
It is my understanding that they have been contacted either by a letter or phone call. I don't know the specifics because I do not handle that as an administrative task. And then they are being asked to apply and handling that.
And so when they do apply, is their date going to be when they get their permit, or does it go retroactive when they started using the water?
It goes to the date of the application.
Okay, thank you.
Two other questions of Adam from the board. I've got a couple. Do you happen to have a well log on this?
Yes, I do. It's in the administrative file.
Okay. I never read through there, but I'm assuming it meets the current construction code?
Yes.
Okay. How long has this well been in use then?
The well was completed, as reported by Alexander Drilling, on May 22nd of 2014. It was marked for domestic and slash stock use, as that is the indicator on our well completion report.
Okay. Thank you. I think you're dismissed. Dan, do you have another witness?
I would call Eric Gronlund, the chief engineer. I can't see from back there, so. Eric, would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Eric Gronlund.
And what is your position?
I am the chief engineer, and in that I also act as the administrator of the water rights program.
Eric, just administratively, were you here earlier when water rights staff was placed under oath?
Yes, I was.
If you understand, you're under oath right now?
Yes.
Okay. So how long have you been chief engineer?
About 14 months.
And what did you do before you were chief engineer?
I've worked for the department since 1984, and specifically with the water rights program since 1990.
What kind of things did you do for the water rights program?
Prior to being the chief engineer, I basically handled the day-to-day processing of water permit applications, dealing with applicants, getting them to properly file the application, basically working with the staff engineers to get the report done, reviewing that report, pre-reviewing it prior to chief engineers, oftentimes drafting recommendations, and then going through the public notice process, and as the board's aware, once something's contested, doing the scheduling and the noticing to bring that matter before this board.
Are you familiar with Water Permit Application 2814-2 for Big Mountain Cabins and Mr. Wolverine?
Yes, I am.
And how so?
I think it originated based on a letter that I sent to Big Mountain Cabins.
Why did you send that letter?
If this board recalls, we had a contested case last July that resulted in findings being considered by the board in October. In the response to those findings from Mr. Buhner, he listed three entities that did not have water permits to his knowledge on file, and then two other entities that he thought were under appropriate, if that's the right word. And based on that, this board gave clear direction that we should make contact with those folks.
What is your recommendation regarding this application?
For approval.
And why are you recommending approval?
I believe based on, after reviewing Adam's report, and based on the best information available, that there's unappropriated water available. I believe based on the best information available, this use will not unlawfully impair existing rights. Based on this board's past decisions in regards to commercial use is similar to this. The board has made determinations that this is a beneficial use of water as well as in the public interest.
Okay. Have you reviewed Mr. Buhner's petition?
Yes, I have.
Mr. Buhner's petition states his concerns that there are entities that appear to no longer be in existence, which have water rights, and that those water rights were considered in the report. Do you have a response to the consideration of those?
If those are on our database as water rights that are licensed, we are under an obligation to consider those being in place until those individuals have due process and those matters can be brought before the board, potentially for cancellation.
Eric, in your years of experience, do the permit holder and the user always match by name?
No, commonly there is a process in state law in which the transfer of ownership is to be filed with us, but it is not uncommon that when a property changes hands, that transfer of ownership with us, just as I guess maybe off topic, but you know, with irrigation, it's fairly easy because irrigation water rights have that irrigation questionnaire, and when we find out we're sending it to the wrong person, Jenny McMath, the staff person, gets notified. But if a commercial property changes, that might get overlooked.
Mr. Buhner's petition also provides that it appears there are entities which are operating in this geographic area which do not have a license. You have a response to that, or do not have a permit, excuse me.
Again, based on Mr. Buhner's filing back with findings on the RNJ last October, there were three entities that he pointed out that he felt were operating without a water right, and two that were basically under permit. So, yeah, I think we were aware that there's some operating without a permit.
What efforts are you taking to bring those entities into compliance?
We've made contact with all five of those entities that were pointed out. Mr. Wildman is one of those, and he was one of the first to file an application. I had contact from another one that was one that Mr. Buhner indicated was under permitted, and he said, no, my well is capable of 13 gallons a minute. That's what he's permitted at. We have a third one that we currently have an application pending and is out for staff review. The other two, I've had personal contact with both of them. The one was probably in December, and I guess I'm somewhat surprised that we haven't received an application from that person. Initially, we had the wrong name that it went to. We sent a follow-up letter in February and still don't have a complete application on that one. The fifth one was the person was out of state. He got our second letter. Since he never responded to the first one, he sent a second letter. I talked to him personally on March 30th and sent him to his out-of-state address an application, and to date we have not received an application. So again, that's another one we're going to follow up on. I assume with this time of year that he's probably back in South Dakota.
Are there methods by which a commercial entity can receive water without requiring a water permit?
Yes.
How so?
if they're receiving water from someone who is permitted, a water distribution system or something on that, or there are commercial uses that are a hookup, just like people's homes are a hookup.
Okay. I believe the final major concern that Mr. Buehner has from his petition is that Big Mountain Cabins has been operating without a permit, and that he doesn't feel the qualifications recommended by you are sufficient. I'd like to ask you a few questions about that. What qualifications are you recommending?
We place three qualifications on the recommendation. The one I think the board is extremely familiar with, because it goes on every groundwater permit application that goes before this board. It's basically the well interference qualification, where the permit holder would have to control their withdrawal such that other domestic uses or prior rights get their needed water supply. And the second one is that there's an annual reporting requirement. That's not something that was always required. We kind of had a little bit of what I call a staged approach, where back probably starting 20 years ago, we started with larger users, and now, with the exception of anyone that uses less than an acre foot, we require annual reporting, similar to the irrigation questionnaire. And the final one is just a clarification that this appropriates up to 2 acre foot per year.
Should the permit issue, what would the permit holder have to do to remain compliant with the law?
I would expect for him to comply with the conditions and the limitations of that permit, meaning a maximum pump rate of 30 gallons per minute, an annual use not to exceed 2 acre feet per year, and to annually report to us.
Are there any other qualifications that you feel are necessary?
No.
And upon what do you base your opinion that these qualifications are sufficient?
To me, again, I go back to the well interference qualification that's going to, if there is a problem, we have a means to address it if it is this well causing some sort of unlawful impairment.
And Eric, are there any actions, any additional actions that the Water Rights Program is taking to provide further information for the board or to protect existing users?
Yes.
And what are those?
As part of, we've had a number of contested cases from the Cambrian Rock recently. So that caused us to have discussions, and I have authorization to place 2 new crystalline rock observation wells in the Hills area. In fact, initially I was given direction to have them completed in this fiscal year. Given the workload of well drillers, we're not going to be able to do that. But we are in the process of putting in 2 new crystalline rock, or getting quotes, to install 2 crystalline rock observation wells. One of those is intended to be right at Rockerville, right between the median of Highway 16. We've worked with DOT, and I think we're close if we don't have the right to occupy the right of way. We're also looking at another one up farther in the northern hills, central to northern hills. I don't think we have a specific site for that one at this time.
Okay. And there were several questions earlier during Mr. Mathewitz's examination about inspections. When does Water Rights conduct an inspection?
Certainly. A little bit of Water Rights 101. Somebody comes before this board or files an applications process, they get a water permit. A water permit is basically authorization to construct and start using the water. As I think it's been mentioned before, is they have a 5-year period to construct works. But we also, when we send out that issue, that new water permit, we also include what's called a notice of completion of works. So, and the owner is supposed to file that notice of completion of works with us. But even if they don't, after that 5-year period, they basically go on the list to have an inspection. And what that inspection means is when one of the staff engineers of the Water Rights Program goes out there and physically reviews the waterworks. It's basically the state verification that the works are constructed and the extent that they're constructed. The best example I will give you, I use it on the phone all the time, is when somebody comes in with an irrigation project, they apply for 160 acres of irrigation, a quarter section of land, and the diversion rate associated with it. But when they actually come to construct that, they place a center pivot, and a center pivot is a circle that will irrigate between 130 to 135 acres, and generally, you know, those center pivots run at 750 to 800 gallons a minute. So where they would have had a water permit potentially for two CFS for 160 acres, during that licensing inspection process, their right gets limited to what's developed, meaning that I'm using 800 gallons a minute, 1.78 CFS, and that 132 acres is the coverage of that center pivot. Sorry, long answer.
Are there any other times when Water Rights conducts an in-person physical inspection?
There are occasions.
What would those occasions be?
Complaint driven.
Okay. Those are all the questions I have for you. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Booner, do you have questions of this witness?
Yes, I do. Just cycling back on a couple of comments that you made, Mr. Grunlin, regarding the transfer of ownership. You recall by state law what the timing is for someone to file with the chief engineer for a transfer of water, right?
If memory serves me right, it's 90 days. I could be stand corrected and be 60 days, but I believe it's 90 days in a statute.
I believe that is correct. So in the figure one area, there are several of those entities where the 90-day time period was not met for any transfers. Is that correct?
Very possible.
Is that a violation of a water right law?
It's not in accordance with the statute necessarily. Whether that's a violation of their water right is probably a legal question.
Are commercial entities producing water without a water right in violation of a water right law?
Yes.
And correct me, but I believe state law says that each day is a separate violation. Is that not correct?
It can be assessed that way.
And that potentially they could have a civil fine of no more than $500 for each violation. Is that not correct?
That is the statute on violations.
Who would be responsible for determining whether or not a violation occurred and whether or not they should be fined?
I believe I have the ability to do an order, but I think it would ultimately be a board determination. Just a clarification, we usually work to bring people into compliance as long as they're willing to do so. That's the normal course of action we take.
Regarding the under-permitting issue that you brought up, first off, I appreciate the effort you've made at trying to correct some of the issues that are here in this area. I see some of it occurring in the file and also in your testimony, and I recognize, quite frankly, these issues that are present have developed over decades of time. But with regard to the individual that said that they were in compliance, the concern I have in looking at your correspondence, you have put a note in the file that they're in compliance based on their phone call, but you don't have anything from that particular entity in writing stating that they're in compliance. Are you comfortable with that?
It's common for us to just do file documentation when we have those. I'm certainly willing to revisit that and require something with a signature if that's what this board feels is necessary.
In that particular case, the issue at hand is how much water are they producing, and the previous owner, again, this was without a transfer being properly done, it indicated that the well was producing 25 gallons a minute. The new owner has indicated that he's staying within the allocated permitted volume of 13 gallons per minute. Did you happen to ask that individual what the pump size is that they have in the well?
I don't recall.
That would be something that a physical inspection could quite easily determine, would it not?
Not necessarily.
If that individual had a pump greater than 13 gallons per minute in that well, would that be a violation of the water right?
If he is pumping at a rate greater than 13 gallons a minute, that very well could be a violation. But if I can go off script a little bit here, is you're using the 25 gallons per minute, if I recall back from the RNJ matter, as being what they told Pennington County. There's a number of systems out there that they pump to some storage or some sort of pressure type. So I'm not certain when he was, the reference you were making of 25 gallons a minute is if that was from his storage, which we would not permit, or if that was from the source.
Just to let you know, I do live in that area. I saw the cistern that was sitting on his property before it was installed, and I know what the timing was, and he was talking about 25 gallons per minute prior to any storage being put in. And when he says that there's reasonable storage, you may want to consider finding out what that volume is, because it's very small relative to the storage that you might anticipate.
Mr. Buehler, can we kind of proceed with questions?
Yes. On a qualification issue, my concern is with this application that we're looking at, and we see it with the RNJ discussion here in the report, we're allocating water volumes that are substantially above the septic volumes of the entities. In this particular case, the allocated volume that's requested is 21 times the septic, approved septic volume. So a qualification that I would like to see considered, and I brought this up after the fact with the RJLC, is I'd like to see metered volumes to ensure that the peak rates, which are 20 times the approved septic volumes, don't occur, particularly over a significant period of time, to where we end up with water quality issues. Because I do believe water quality is a factor of beneficial use. So do you think it's prudent to approve a water right where the maximum permitted rate is 20 times what their approved, that DEA and our approved septic volume is?
We processed the application and reviewed under the criteria for a water right permit based on the application requested quantity of water.
But as chief engineer, would you have the right to place that type of qualification on the water permit?
I think this board has the ability to place quantifications and limitations on a water right if it deems it necessary.
One last area I'd like to ask you about, and again, this is state law on failure to use beneficially appropriated water. And it gets into kind of like the water cancellation issue, where it says if you don't use the water that you've been allocated for the use that is intended during a three-year period, any portion that you don't use becomes unappropriated water and reverts back to the public. And you've reviewed the report, and you see in many of these entities, when you apply that 60% of the diversion rate, you have huge volumes of water. Without doing a physical inspection, how would you know whether or not during that three-year period they were using their allocated water?
Because they're required to annually report.
When last have you got the annual volume reports? Do you happen to know from Pine Haven Heritage Home?
I would not have looked at that, but my sense is that that water rate is, those water rates in that area are extremely old, some dating back to the 1950s. That was prior to us requiring reporting on those type of uses.
Rockerville Park?
Again, my sense is, I did not check that, is that's a water rate of such an age that they are not required to report.
If these are water rights, I don't disagree with what you're saying, that these water rights exist. But if these are entities that are not producing water and are not showing up on the DANR, Public Water System Database, how would you know that they have produced their allocated water in the last 3 years if you have not done an inspection?
I do not know for certain whether they are using water, are or are not using water.
Regarding under-permitted, one of the entities, and we haven't really talked about it here, is one that I have not brought up because they have a water right and they're on the in the Public Water System Database, and that is Hillside Country Cabins. Priority date of 1898, water right of 2 gallons per minute. In table one of the engineer's report, estimated usage of 1.2 gallons per minute. When you look at their website, they have 18 cabins, log homes, and an executive lodge, maximum occupancy of 80 people. This entity was initially established in 1933 by bringing in cabins from a work camp. So it has been operating since 1931. They say it's probably the oldest rental cabins in the hills. 18 cabins, 2 gallon per minute water rate. Do you believe that that is likely under permit?
I do not know. That is one of those that was on the list of what I call under permitted that we sent letters to. I had a phone call from the new owner, and I thought we were down a path where we were going to get a water permit application, but she was going to research the pump size, also needed a transfer, if memory serves me right, and we have not received that application.
Are water rights priority dates important?
They can be.
I have no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Beamer. Mr. Wildman?
No questions.
Mr. Do you have anything?
No redirect at this time, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Does the board have any questions of Mr. Grunlund? Board have any questions? Thank you, Eric. Do you have another witness?
There are no further witnesses on behalf of Water Rights.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Wildman, do you have a witness?
No.
Mr. Buehner?
I'd like to call myself.
Okay.
Is it B-U-E-H-N-E-R?
B-U-E-H-N-E-R.
And it was Lon, correct?
Yes, L-O-N.
If you'd like to raise your right hand, I'll swear you in. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give in this cause will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God?
I do. My name is Lon Buehner. I live in the Rockerville area. I had the opportunity of talking to you board members during the RJLC hearing. I would like to say that I did have some dialogue with Mr. Grunlund at the time. Face to face and in writing, I've invited him out to the Rockerville area. Unfortunately, with COVID and everything else and schedules, we weren't able to get together because I wanted to personally explain to him what I consider to be some of the water rights issues in the area. I do appreciate the effort that he's going to be going through, and has been going through, to try to clean up some of the things that are there. I'd like to go ahead and enter exhibit number 200, if I could. This is simply a screenshot or screen print of a map of the South Dakota Water Rights DA in our database.
No objection.
Thank you.
Just hard to see, but other than that, no.
I apologize, it's hard to see, but I didn't want to make it my own. I just wanted to
start to exhibit 200.
What I'd like to do is just point out that if you look at the area on Highway 16 that is split, you can see the water rights here that are listed in Table 1 of the Chief Engineer's Report. Rockerville Park, Rockerville Trading Post, Pine Haven Heritage Home. Over on the bottom left-hand side, you can see the Hillside Country Cabins, and I mentioned that a little earlier. I'd like to go ahead and enter exhibit number 201. This is also a computer screenshot. This is from the Water Systems database of EANR. Again, I pulled this up and printed it.
No objection from Water Rights.
Okay, we'll accept exhibit 201. No objections.
Thank you.
So on exhibit number 201, if you look at that area, you see some different entities. You see Rockerville Gold Nugget Lodge, Rockerville Motel and Cabins. There is an entity that, because of the spacing, it doesn't show up, but the entity in the middle is the Gaslight Restaurant. Again, to the left, you can see the Hillside Country Cabins. Now, when you compare what's present on exhibit number 200 with what's present on exhibit number 201, you can see some differences. Showing in the water system program are the Rockerville Gold Nugget Lodge. That's what used to be the Pine Haven Heritage Home. Pine Haven Heritage Home hasn't been in operation for at least 5 years. This is one of those entities that transfers have not been properly made within a 90-day period. The Rockerville Motel and Cabins that you see on the water, drinking water side, that's actually the Rockerville Trading Post on the water right side. Again, transfers have not occurred. Just to go off topic, I personally visited and went in the Rockerville Trading Post in 1970 when I was going to college. It was a gift shop that has recently, well, I won't say that the Trading Post has been converted to a motel, but what you do have is you do have the Rockerville Motel and Cabins that are now present on that same property. You see that the gas light doesn't show up on the water rights, but does show up on the drinking water. An issue that I am concerned about are water rights of these entities that are producing out here but don't have a water right. What you don't see on either one of these are Silver Mountain cabins that are located between the applicant and Storm Mountain Center. When I look at the number of occupancies that they have on their website, it should trigger them needing a water right database. They maybe don't need one, depending on the number of diversion points that they have and what their water systems are like. There is a chance that they do not have to be regulated, even though they serve the public. I think it's highly unlikely, but it is a chance. But you don't know without a water right. They have been operating for years, don't have a water right. That's a new entity that I did not know of previously. If you go way down on the lower left-hand corner, on the water, drinking water side, website, you see Cosmos Mystery Area. It's been present since the 1950s, 1952. It is not listed as having a water right. Now I recognize when you talk about water rights, there's a lot of different reasons for water, irrigation. And we're kind of in a unique situation here in the hills, because when you look at all these entities, Hillside Country, Cabins, Rockerville Lodge, Rockerville Motel and Cabins, Gaslight Restaurant. We serve the public. State law says that they need a drinking water permit. State law says they need to have a water right. So when I come before this board and say there's omissions and errors that I'd like to see cleaned up, hopefully you can see why I'm saying that. Specifically, when you compare these two areas, the entity that has no public water system, database information, no water rights of the Mount Cabins. The commercial entities with a public water system, but no water right, Big Mount Cabins, which is here today, Cosmos, Gaslight Restaurant, Rockerville Gold Nugget Lodge, Rockerville Hotel and Cabins. I recognize I'm cleaning up and getting some of that off the list. Just so you know, and for the record, if you go a little bit further to the west, you'll come across Rustic Ridge Guest Cabins. Again, they're on the public water database, do not have a water right. Commercial entities, which you're showing have a water right, but there's no public water system. I live there. I've been there since 2003. They don't exist. Rockerville Park, Rockerville Gold Town, Pine Haven Heritage Home, which has been changed, Rockerville Trading Post.
If I may, I understand Mr. Buehner has a lot of concerns, but I'm not sure of the relevance of many of these statements. And so I would object.
Mr. Chairman, I would say they are relevant because it gets back to the accuracy and completeness of the report, and the report is the basis for the recommendation brought forward by the chief engineer.
The objection is going to be sustained.
I'd like to go ahead and enter exhibit number 202. These pages I pulled off of the DANR database. If you go to the database itself, it allows you to click and pull up detailed information. So these were pulled up from that and printed off.
I would object just to relevance.
Mr. Chairman, they are relevant because it gets back to the Department of Natural Resources or the federal government saying that it is appropriate to inspect these entities periodically.
We're going to sustain the objection and not admit it as evidence.
In 1988, the Bureau of Reclamation, Department of Interior, had apparently stated that they were going to oppose vested water rights in three counties in western South Dakota because of the lack of inspection. The state performed some inspections and got back to the Bureau of Reclamation. I believe the point of that effort was that there was an expectation that these rights should be inspected periodically. I think state law indicates it should be inspected periodically. For example, the 3 years, if you don't use your alligator water in 3 years, you lose what you haven't used. When I look at the detailed file information on the DANR water rights database, I can't say that it's complete, but I have no reason to not believe it's complete. The Rockerville Gold Town water right was last inspected in 1971, 50 years ago. The Rockerville Park, 1971, 50 years ago. The Rockerville Trading Post, 1990. Approximately 30 years ago. Pine Haven Heritage Home, 1991, 30 years ago. Mr. Buehner, that inspection.
Mr. Buehner, somehow you need to take what you're talking about and tie it back to the incident application. It's not a general statement on the status of water rights. It's tied to this incident application in some way.
Okay. The lack of inspection has resulted in information that's used in the preparation of the report that is incomplete and is inaccurate. I requested to the chief engineer at the time, prior to the RJ LLC report being prepared, that they take into account some of these issues and reconsider doing the report over again. They did not do that. It's the lack of inspection that I think has caused us to have water rights listed that are probably not actually using water. These water rights, keep in mind your 60% rule is used to estimate use. When you have a water problem develop, like we have had, or if you have one in the future, it's going to be critical, I think, for DANR to understand what the water use is in the area. I think to grant this application, it is important that the data be complete. and correct. I do not believe that the information can be corrected without on-site inspections. So a qualification that I would like to see is that there be periodic inspections. And I would encourage the water program staff to develop a process for inspections that similar to what the water, drinking water people have, because all these properties have been inspected in the last 4 years by that group. The last comment I'd like to make, let me go ahead and enter exhibit number 203, which is a letter that Mr. Grumlin authored back in the year 2000 for Mr. Parker that was inquiring about a water right for the Gaslight restaurant.
The water rights would object as to relevance.
It's relevant again because it gets back to
sustained, not interceptive.
With regard to Water Act 479-2, the allocated water on 479-2, there was a letter written by the owner of the Gaslight in year 2000, and there was some question on whether or not a transfer should occur to that particular owner who had purchased part of the property that Water 479-2 was under. That issue apparently was not resolved. Most recently, that same water right is under what's called the Rockerville Plan Unit Development. The water program staff was asked what their water right was that they're entitled to, and they were told that they're entitled to the full allocation of the 70 gallons a minute. And in addition to that, you have in a report estimated water use that says this water right's already being used. So you have the Gaslight setting out there. My fear, and it gets back to the comment that was brought up earlier, the approval of this application now, in my opinion, clearly has the potential to be very detrimental to other commercial entities that need a water right, are operating now, but don't have one. The best example I'll use is a Gaslight. If there is a water right, 479, 482, that are still in place, it's because the Gaslight has been operating since the 1950s. Why they're not in here asking for a right, I don't know. But the last thing I want to see is that they or any other entity come in later and say, okay, here's your water right. Your water right has a priority date of when you applied, and they have a water right that has a lower priority than Big Mont Canvas, a lower priority than RJ LLC. Because I don't think that's fair. So again, my opinion, there's a lot of cleanup that needs to be done. Inspections need to be made to clean it up. Then a final report that's properly, including all information, can be used to correct the issues that are there. I have no other comments.
Any other questions of this witness?
Just a moment, please. I do have just a few questions. Mr. Buhner, I understand your concerns with the area as a whole. I want to see if I can refine it just a little bit. you understand there's four factors that the board has to consider, and one of them is the availability of unappropriated water. Am I correct in understanding that you do not believe that there is available water to be appropriated?
I believe there is. There are enough errors in the assumptions that have been made in the report such that I am not comfortable that there is unallocated water available.
Okay. What is your opinion as to the potential for Mr. Wildeman's application to unlawfully impair another water right?
Without additional information, right across the road from him is Hillside Country. Yes. I have no idea how much water they're using. I have no idea how much water Mr. Wildeman is using. He's been using water for years.
Do you know if Hillside Country Cabins has filed any complaints?
I suspect they haven't. I know that they had their water right revalidated in the early 1990s. I suspect that they probably would not raise an issue knowing that they're servicing their needs with a 2 gallon per minute water right, in my opinion.
Do you think granting a water right for purposes of a cabin would be a beneficial use of water?
Not necessarily. If you grant a water right for the purposes of a cabin and you grant that water right with a maximum permissible rate, that's 21 times the approved septic volume. As a result of that, you end up with contaminated water. I would argue that that's not a beneficial use of the water.
So you believe that water quality considerations should be considered at the same time as appropriating water?
I believe it should. The application for a water right permit has on there what the septic volume is. Just the fact that that's there tells me it should be considered and be a factor.
Okay. I believe that's, all the questions I have for you. Thank you.
Mr. Wildeman, do you have questions?
Sure. Any way that septic systems are installed is locations is not my property isn't hooked to a municipality.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
I'm a certified septic installer for the state of South Dakota of any kind. I can install several different septic systems within my property, just as long as I'm within the distances and the area. So when I apply for a building permit, that building permit goes through the county and they tell me whether I can have it due to the size of my septic system. Understand that?
Yes.
So if I were to apply for more than the septic system can take as an inflow, I have to build a new system. Do you understand that?
Yes.
So in business, you try to build things or try to get the permitting for the size that you eventually want to be at, not exactly where you're at that point. Right now, I'm currently at five cabins, which is under the septic size, which is well under the water volume that I'm requesting. But I do have a future plan, and so I want to get that in place and not have to worry about coming back at it. Okay. Okay.
The concern, since you brought it up, sir, the concern I have is that Pennington County grants you your building permit, your construction permit, without determining that you have water right in place.
I will say yes. Your first, I can't really address this as a question, but your first, in your complaint, you said that I was operating without a permit, and I what is the likelihood that I will continue to operate without one? Well, it is a tricky area because I did not understand that we were even supposed to have a water rights permit in order to do this. So yeah, there's a little gray area there where I think we got overlooked. I went to the Better Business Bureau, got all the permits we needed to get going on it. I built my personal house there first. We drilled a well so it wouldn't look like a residential well to them. So I lived there for several years before we went ahead with the cabin business. So it's been operating actually since 18. So we've been a couple years out of compliance. But immediately when Mr. Duval sent me the letter and the clerk, we applied for it immediately. I called him directly. So it wasn't as if I was operating in a way that was like, in defiance. You know what I mean? It was really in ignorance, I suppose. But I think the question I guess I would have for you is it doesn't seem, I don't know, I've never met you before. I mean, you're my neighbor, too bad, but that we haven't met. But the deal is it doesn't look like with what's going on here, it looks almost as if that you use this as a platform to voice your concerns with the DENR function itself and not personally me or my business. It would seem to me that that's what you are doing. Is that what you're looking for? You're looking for changes within the DNR, not in changes in...
I can understand why you feel that way, but recognize, first off, I appreciate you being here. You're making an effort to try to solve issues that I have seen around you. But I'm trying to recognize the process of reports being prepared and the understanding the approval process of the water right itself, understanding the state laws that tie back to water rights. I have been on a learning curve like this with water rights, and the reason we're here is because there was a unique situation developed in the county that required a water right to be obtained prior to permits being received to another party. I believe it was appropriate, given issues we've had with water quantity and quality right down the road from you, to bring my concerns forward. This is not the first time I brought my concerns forward. I hope it's the last. So don't take it personal, and I recognize, yes, I'm asking the Water Board and the Water Board staff to take whatever steps are necessary to go ahead and correct the situation.
So I guess, so your grievance isn't a complaint against my application, it's a complaint against the procedural workings of the DENR?
No, I also have a complaint with you because state laws, in my opinion, were violated.
Thank you, Mr. Wildman. Questions of the board? Of this witness? Questions of the board? Somebody have a question? Hearing none, you're dismissed. I think we've already had our closing comments. Do you think you need one, Ann?
I can certainly present a closing argument if you would like. If you would like to waive closing arguments, I'm fine with that as well.
I think we've had them already, then. Action is ordered. Well, Mr. Wildman, do you want to make a closing statement?
I'm real quick, I guess. Sure. Like I said, we built our personal house there first, and we drilled a residential well, but it was on commercial property, so we built a cabin, but we didn't start the vacation rental cabin business until 2018. wasn't aware that we had to have a water rights permit. In fact, we thought we were in compliance with that form in the sense that we have to give quarterly water samplings to the state for the health department, and they didn't tell us that we were supposed to get a water rights permit. So, non-compliance, yes, we're non-compliant, but it was out of just sheer ignorance and overlook, maybe. But my business is very small. I mean, it's just me and my three kids, my wife and my three kids, not a large water consumption property. We do plan on expanding eventually, but as it's worth to the tourist industry, it's a benefit in the sense that everything's both in the summertime if you've been out to the hills, and it's just the more that people build, you think, well, they couldn't build anymore, but the demand is there for that, But anyways, I just appreciate you letting me voice my concerns.
Thank you. You can do your closing statement, obviously, that one, and I want that y'all in.
Well, I'll just bring the board back to the statute 46289, which requires that the four factors must be met before the board can grant an application for the appropriation of water. Those are: there must be availability of unappropriated water. There's a reasonable probability that there will not be an unlawful impairment of existing rights. That the application be of a beneficial use and in the public interest. And in looking at this, the courts have held that the board is to use the best information reasonably available. There's case law out there that talks about how you don't have to go out and reinvent the wheel. And what you heard today was evidence, testimony, based on the best information reasonably available. Right now, that's the Driscoll and Carter report. It says there's a minimum of 3,600 acre feet of recharge available. And the report says there's got to be much more than that because we have all of this going to streams. There's way more than 3,600. And you heard the testimony of Adam Affluent, an engineer who's worked with water rates for 9 years, looking at different applications, different aquifers. He told you his opinion that there is unappropriated water available. He also told you that based on his experience and expertise, that there is a reasonable probability that unlawful impairment will not occur. The faults function as a boundary. Not only that, but you have the fact that in Exhibit 3, you can see how close Water Rate 2224-2 is to this proposed version. Hillside Country Cabin, which I believe is the 2224-2, has not filed a complaint. They've not intervened. I think it's a safe assumption, or one could reasonably assume, that there's not a problem with a unlawful impairment. You heard the chief engineer testify that this is consistent with previous findings of beneficial use and public interest. I understand Mr. Buehner's concerns. I think some of it's miscommunication. I think some of it is a desire to see things done the way he believes they are to be done and not necessarily the way it's required by law or by rule. As you heard, Mr. Gronlund has heard what Mr. Buehner has said and has taken great strides, I believe, to advance the information available and to try to resolve some of those concerns. And with that, we would ask you to approve this application with the qualifications set forth in the chief engineer's recommendation. I understand Mr. Buehner is also asking that you add a qualification of metering. That is not something that has been done typically for this type of a water right. However, the chief engineer will abide by whatever decision the board makes with that in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Buehner, a brief closing statement?
Yes. With regard to the
metering qualification, I just would like to say that this is, from what I can tell, a different water right in that you're allocating large volumes of water that greatly exceed septic issues. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have a water right. I'm just asking you to not bring the water right now. I would like to see these issues addressed together. I would like to see one report prepared. Now, maybe this can't be done, but I will just toss it out for the board. I'd like to see one report prepared that would clean these things up, that would give water rights to the people that need a water right. I would like to see the priority dates go back to the dates that these entities started to operate, which would be beneficial to people like you, because I think that would be fair and equitable. I also would like to quickly point out, and this was in the report, I was one of the petitioners that came in and said that how the development of local wells, all domestic use wells, etc., had created issues and interference with existing wells. And in the end of it, it says, neither of these claims have been investigated or substantiated by the Water Rights Program. I'm just asking you, on behalf of my community, to be heard. I don't think granting this water right now is appropriate because of the lack of proper information and the potential problems with regard to the priority rights. I will add one other thing. This is important enough to me and my community that I will be hand-delivering a complaint submittal to the chairman and to Mr. Grunlund, just because perhaps that is required for an inspection to be heard or an investigation to begin to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reamer. Okay, we're closing to testimony and limiting to board action and discussion.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to start things off, I would move that we grant the application for water permit 2814-2, subject to the qualifications of the chief engineer set forth in the report.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Freeman. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Larson. I will second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion on the motion to approve water permit 2814-2?
Mr. Chairman,
I will be voting for the approval of the permit, but I would just like to say that I understand the broad issues that Mr. Buhner has presented. And I agree they need to be addressed, but I don't think that we should punish Mr. Wildeman for all of those perhaps oversights and shortcomings.
Thank you, Ms. Dixon. Further comments on the motion to approve?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have some of the same feelings. And we're going on a lot of issues, and there's a lot of situations that has the same conditions that's falling into place here. But they need to be addressed. And I do not feel that we should take his permit out of his hands and not give it to him. But these issues have to be addressed. So. It's a environmental. It's an issue. It's that needs to be addressed. I guess that's where I want to come. Thank you.
Further comments on the motion to approve?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to remind everyone that unfortunately we don't live in a perfect world, and unfortunately we don't have a money tree in the backyard that the state can shake. there are limitations to manpower and things that we can do because we have financial limitations. So I understand everybody's concerns, but again, I think we have to live in a real world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Anybody else? Comments? I, too, agree with Mr. Freeman. You know, there is things that I think they're making steps to take care of the problems, trying to find them out, but we do not have the staff to take care of that. If we had another 20 people on staff, you could probably do a lot of discussions. And maybe we could do some training with Department of Health and other things, but it takes lots of dollars. So, until we pass the state income tax, we probably won't have that done. I said further comments on the motion to approve?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, maybe by combining these two agencies together, we'll have more ability to get our problem solved.
Those colored glasses on. Hearing none, the Secretary will call the roll.
York?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Nutmegs?
Aye. Motion carries. Mr. McVeigh.
If you would mind preparing the findings of fact and conclusions of law, June 17th for the draft, and then folks will have until June 25 to file any objections or counter proposals for the findings of fact and conclusions of law. Okay.
Okay. How long is this going to be?
Not long.
Let's take a break.
Finish this up then.
Yep.
Okay. Let's take a break.
11 o'clock item.
Let's take
a recommendation to the Department Secretary to approve applications for renewal of the groundwater discharge plans for Wharf Resources Reliance Spent Ore Depository. Groundwater discharge 1-94 and Funeral Pulley Spent Ore Depository, groundwater discharge 1-98. Mr.
McVeigh. On approximately January 27th and January 29th, the Secretary of DENR formally requested that the Water Management Board act as the Secretary's hearing examiner for the purpose of these two applications. On March 3rd, at our last meeting, the Board took action and accepted the Secretary's request and appointed Board Member Larson to act as the hearing chair in the matter. At that time, there was already a motion to dismiss, which had been filed by the applicant. And on March 31, a pre-conference hearing was held to decide on the applicant's motion to dismiss. At that hearing, the intervener never appeared at the call. Testimony was taken from the applicant, and the intervener's papers were reviewed in relation to that motion to dismiss. At the conclusion of that hearing, Hearing Officer Larson granted the motion to dismiss, and in the order, it commanded that any appeal of the order to the could be appealed to the board in its entirety, and that any appeal would have to be filed by April 26, 2021, at or before 5 p.m. Central. As of this date, no appeal has been filed, and the time is run for it to file an appeal. The order also stated that in the event that the intervener fails to appeal as of by April 26, that a recommendation to approve the application will be delivered to the Secretary of ANR. Since the time is run for appeal, it's appropriate that the board makes a recommendation to the Secretary, and I have the recommendation here to be signed by the board chair. But I believe that board action to approve that action should happen. Does anybody have any comments on that?
This is Anna Xavier, DANR. I was just going to note my appearance for the record. I believe counsel for Wharf is on, but I do not see Ms. Santella.
If counsel for the applicant could state their appearance for the record as well.
Yes, I'd like to know my appearance, but I don't have anything.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I missed it.
Can you hear me? Okay, this is Dwayne Boomroot appearing on behalf of Wharf Resources, and I'd like to note that my appearance has been made at this, but I have nothing to add to Mr. McVeigh's summary.
Okay, thank you. I think we're in yes or board action.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would move we adopt the we adopt the hearing officer's order and forward the recommendation for approval to the secretary.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Freeman to approve the recommendation of the hearing chair. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, I second.
Second by Ms. Dixon. Further discussion on the motion to approve? Further discussion on the motion to approve? Hearing none. Secretary will call the roll, please.
Bjork?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Huttmaker?
Aye. Motion carried. Nothing else on the agenda? We'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Ron? Just a note that your next scheduled board meeting is July 7th and 8th. Somebody left it off the agenda who I don't want to name. But you do set the proposed dates for the year, so that date has already been discussed. But if there was a conflict, now would be a good time to point that out.
Is that good with everyone, 7th and 8th?
It's the day before my birthday, so it's before my birthday.
Sammy, we have to bring presents.
We all got to bring the cake.
Mr. Chairman?
I would move we adjourn.
Hold on. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Mr. Larson. July 7th and 8th, I have been in a trial in Fort Dodge, Iowa. I do not know if it may settle. It's just on my calendar right now, just so you know.
Okay. Okay, thank you much. I have a motion by Mr. Freeman to adjourn.
I'll second that motion.
Second by Holzbauer. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye.